This is the Remote Podcast, and I am your host, Victor Kung. You're listening to episode 33. Hello and welcome to the Remote Podcast, episode 33. This podcast is all about location independence, digital nomadism, and living life on your terms. Each week we interview a new guest on the show, and this week was a bit special because I sat down with two guests instead of one. Please welcome Carrie DePhillips and Kelly Chase, co-hosts of the Workationing Podcast. The two of them are traveling to 12 countries in 12 months this year to experience the digital nomad lifestyle. To start, I loved this interview. Carrie and Kelly are a bunch of fun. They first shared how they came up with the idea of going on a workation before sharing their wacky and crazy adventures so far in Puerto Rico and Medellin, Colombia. In fact, we spent the vast majority of the interview just on their stories. So this interview went by so quickly and it inspired me to make the most out of my travels since I'll be traveling for the next few months as well. But anyways, without further ado, let's jump straight into it. Welcome, Carrie and Kelly. So glad to have you on the Remote Podcast today. To quickly introduce you to my audience, Carrie DePhillips and Kelly Chase are co-hosts of the Workationing Podcast, and they are spending 2017 traveling the world making use of the digital nomad lifestyle. So why don't you tell us all about what workationing is and what you guys have been up to this year?
So workationing is this little scheme that Kelly and I have cooked up where we're spending about a month at a time in different locations around the world. We kicked it off with a stay in Puerto Rico, and then we just left Medellin, Colombia, and we stayed in Medellin for a little bit longer, 7 weeks. But the purpose of workationing is to travel around the world. Obviously, Kelly and I work in digital marketing, so we take our jobs with us. But we're trying to be as intentional as possible about the way that we're living. And so the goal for every place is to accomplish a personal goal, a professional goal, and cross something off of our bucket list.
Okay, cool.
So that's what we've been doing.
That's so cool. And it's great that you guys have each other to rely on to be accountability partners, to make sure that you do tick off whatever it is on your bucket list. So the way I wanna structure today's interview is I wanted to talk a bit about each of your origin stories. I guess I'm treating you as superheroes. And then I want to talk all about all your travel adventures, because I've listened to your podcast and I think the two of you just bring so much energy. So instead of just focusing on the origin story the whole time, I want to focus more on the adventure aspect. So, you know, whichever of you want to start first, just let my audience know a bit about who you are, like how you got into digital nomadism and travel and whatever else you want to share with us.
Kelly, do you want to start?
Sure. So this whole digital nomad thing is something that took root in me probably a decade ago. I think it was a slow journey for me. But when I was in my early 20s, my father passed away from cancer, and I was with him in the end. I was with him actually the day that he found out that he was terminal. And the doctor called and let him know that. And we were just sort of alone in the house afterwards, kind of just processing that information. And I looked at my dad and I just said, "Dad, is there anything I can do? Is there anywhere you want to go?" And he broke down crying. And my dad was not at all a crier. I only saw him cry a handful of times in my life. And he just said, "Everywhere I've never been." And that has been something that has just echoed in me over the past decade. Just this, my dad had become a doctor much later in life. He was a high school dropout who had sort of climbed his way back up, and he always wanted to travel, but he had put that off, and it's something that it was for the future, you know, once he had accomplished everything that he wanted to accomplish. And so I think because of that, I have this awareness that time isn't promised to you. And so, yes, I'm extremely serious about my career, but I also don't want to be using my career as an excuse to put off the things in life that I'm really passionate about, and travel is one of them. Now, I work remotely and handle digital marketing for a few different clients, and I'm able to do that. And so that's what we've decided to do. And it's been really fantastic.
Thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
So, Carrie.
I started in advertising right out of college, and I dated this guy who wrote for AskMen.com at the time, and he wrote for a couple of different men's interests websites and magazines, and he just had the coolest job I'd ever seen. He got paid to travel around the country and sometimes travel around the world and have these killer experiences and then write about them. And I said to myself, well, I want to get in on that action. So I asked him if he would teach me how to break into the writing world. And he told me no. He was a real dick about it, actually. And he was just like, you know, everyone thinks that they can do this. And if I helped everyone who wanted it, I would never have any time. And so that was the last time I ever saw that guy. But then the next day, I started going through Craigslist and applying for every writing job that might possibly be any kind of fit whatsoever. It took me a few months, but was making more money on the side, freelance writing, than I was at my day job in advertising. And I didn't have to get ready in the morning and then commute downtown and then deal with parking downtown and all of the daily commute, the grind of that really wears you down, especially if you're a woman and it takes you longer to get ready. That's a lot of time that you're not being paid for. I laugh at the idea of getting ready to go do a job that you're already ready to do. And so when I started making more money freelance writing, I quit my day job. And eventually I started my agency, The Content Factory, and we do PR, social media marketing, and SEO and content for several national brands. And I've worked from home ever since. And once you're able to untether your life and be in a position to where you can work from home, then you can really work from anywhere. And that was the next phase for me, is if I can work from anywhere, I want to be able to work from everywhere, and I'm just going to go do that. So in the last 7 years, I've worked from 40 different states, and last year I worked from 10 different countries alone. So I've really been putting my capabilities to work, and it really transformed my life. Honestly, I hear Kelly's story about how her dad waited until it was too late to travel. And I think of how transformative travel has been for me. And I really think that more people should be front-loading their lives with travel, because it gives them a broader and more informed perspective for the rest of their lives.
Gotcha. You know, first off, Kelly, thanks for sharing your story. And I'm so glad that you're able to carry out your father wanted you to be able to do. And Carrie, I think it's so cool that you've been able to live this type of lifestyle for the past 7 years. So I have to ask you, since you've already been, you know, working in 40 different states the last 7 years, how did you come up with the idea for workationing? And how is that different from some of the experiences that you've already had in the past?
So there's a big difference. I don't go anywhere for fewer than 3 days. And it's because the headspace and hassle that it takes to just get from point A to point B, you really want to stay in one location long enough to recoup and be able to get some work done and maybe see some sights. And typically my travel is anywhere from, or had been when I was just traveling around and visiting friends and staying in hotels and whatever, checking out the sights. I would typically stay anywhere from 5 days to 2 weeks in various locations. Last year, I did 2 months out in Europe. I stayed in each place for a couple of weeks. And I found that the longer you stay in one place, the more it starts to feel like home, the more you're able to get a feel for the culture, the less pressured you feel to drop your work obligations and go and take selfies near the Eiffel Tower or whatnot. When you're staying in a place for, let's say, a month, you've got plenty of time to hole up in your apartment or Airbnb for 3 days at a time, knock out a bunch of work, and then go see some sights. And so extending travel for a month, now we're hopping around a month at a time in different places, that introduces benefits and it also introduces challenges. So for example, Kelly and I put all of our stuff into 10 by 10 storage facilities. Kelly's is in Ohio and mine is in New Hampshire, before we left on this adventure. And we are living out of carry-on, international carry-ons, which are smaller. So we're just rolling around the world with a carry-on and a personal item, because it makes travel easier and less expensive.
With all of our podcast equipment in there too.
Oh, Kelly stays getting flagged by customs. They are just very interested in this large black box.
Oh, no.
She looks the type.
Shady.
So, Shady Kelly, how did you feel when Carrie came up with the idea of workationing? And differed or met or exceeded the expectations that you had so far?
Ooh, I love this question. So juicy. This had been Carrie's idea for a while. Carrie and I had workationed together a little bit in shorter bursts. We did Mexico, we did Dominican Republic, because Carrie and I, we've known each other for years and we're really good friends. And so once we were able to start doing this together, it was great. And it was something that we had talked about a little bit here and there, but it wasn't until July 31st, actually, a day that will live in infamy of 2016, that Carrie called me and we were having kind of this long conversation, and I could tell she was like getting at something and I couldn't figure out quite what it was. And then she just came out with this idea and I could not say yes, queen, fast enough. Like, I was really looking for an opportunity like this. I knew that doing it on your own is something that just makes it a lot more difficult. I think especially as a woman, because there's safety concerns. If you're in a country somewhere and something goes wrong, it's nice to have one other person in that country who cares if you live or die.
Yeah.
So that's really beneficial.
You really need somebody to call Nancy Grace.
Yeah. My very, very blonde friend is missing, Nancy Grace. We must find her. So I was really excited and I was really on board. It was a terrifying experience. It's really hard to get rid of your apartment, to put all your stuff in storage, to say goodbye to your family and friends, not knowing quite when you'll be back. And that causes a lot of stress, but I think we were both really committed all the way through. And I know that we're both really glad that we stuck with that commitment, because I think kind of instantly, once we got to where we were going, when we landed in Aguada, Puerto Rico, we're suddenly just like, yes, this is exactly what we want it to be, which is, as you said, we're able to be accountability partners for each other. We've stripped away everything from our lives that isn't completely necessary to the goals that we're pursuing. And it just clears up so much headspace. We're more productive. We're happier. We're getting, I know I'm more fulfilled. I mean, we just look at each other probably a couple times a week and are like, can you believe that this is our life? And that's a really, really nice feeling to have about your life.
Yeah, when you're standing in a penthouse suite in Medellin, Colombia, looking out over the city, and you've got floor-to-ceiling windows in a corner unit, and you feel like J-Lo, and you're spending the same amount of money as you did back home, but you're living like a queen, like the queen that you've always felt in your heart that you are, you know?
You're just winning. You're winning at life.
It feels good, I have to tell you. And Kelly and I are all about chasing more of those experiences.
Well, and Carrie and I are both people who just live for a good story. When you're on the road, it's just nothing but weird things happening to you. And we've been having just an excellent time collecting good stories, chasing adventures. I don't think I've ever laughed so hard in my life as I have in the last 3 months.
That's so good.
So we're just having a blast.
And we've met some really interesting people too. Very interesting people.
Yeah. So now that you mentioned great stories and collecting great stories during your travels, why don't we just focus on that for the rest of the podcast? You guys started in January, is that correct?
Yep. January 1st.
January 1st.
Kelly was very hungover. I was not.
Oh, really?
I partied the day before. My friends threw me a going away prom, complete with a disco ball in the living room and everything. It was very special. But then I was too hungover to party on New Year's. Kelly didn't have that problem, though.
I'm a trooper. I'm a warrior.
So one of you started off the new year on the right foot. The other one was recovering. But fast forward to today, it's been almost 3 whole months. So why don't you take us through the beginning from January to now, and then we'll just go through story by story.
All right.
Do you want to start with Chicken of the Trees, Kelly?
I feel like that's a great place to start.
As Kelly said, we like interesting stories and we just stay chasing the weird. And we like to press our faces just as close up against the glass to the weird stuff without getting hurt as we can. You know, sometimes it gets a little dangerous and sketchy. Other times it's just fun. And Chicken of the Trees is one of the just fun ones. So we found out when we got to Puerto Rico that they have a crazy iguana problem. There are more iguanas on that island than there are people. And these iguanas are terrifying Jurassic Park looking critters that are 6 feet long. They run way faster than you think they should be able to, and they swim. Victor, they swim, and they swim faster than you can, and they're just very scary looking.
It's horrible.
Oh, man. That reminds me of the Skull Crushers. I recently watched Kong Skull Island. Oh, God.
It was a very very similar experience, I have to tell you.
And they would be dead on the road sometimes. They preserve very well. I think it's just their skin. And so you're never quite sure if it's actually dead or just kind of playing the long game. And like, is it a purse or is it going to get you? I don't know. And it was very scary. But some people are trying to deal with this iguana problem because they're eating the crops. And they, I guess, burrow under the roads and cause the roads to collapse. They're just problematic. They aren't supposed to be there in the first place, and they have no natural predators. So they're just kind of slowly taking over the island.
Where do they come from? That's so bizarre.
I think they were pets.
They were pets, yeah. But then they grow real big. You know, you get a cute little baby iguana, and you think it's going to be like one of those teacup potbelly pigs, and then all of a sudden it's 700 pounds and frightening the children. It's not good. But some people are trying to capitalize on iguana and also solve the iguana problem by putting the meat on menus. And they have rebranded iguana meat as the chicken of the trees because they hang out in trees. And you'll look up and there will just be this like giant dinosaur creature hanging out. It's red meat, which you would not expect. I didn't expect it, at least. Kelly, I know she was very surprised by that. And so once we found out that iguana meat was a thing, we became obsessed with procuring and trying it. Nothing was going to stop us. And we like to find fixers on the road. Life is just easier when you travel with fixers. And in Puerto Rico, we imported two fixers from the mainland. They were two of my friends, and they just had extra time on their hands. And the one guy's kind of a grifty traveler type, always looking for a way to make money. He dove for octopus and conch while we were out there. He was very interested in capturing iguanas to sell them to the butcheries out there because I guess there's some loot to be made with that particular grift.
The trick is you have to get them live.
Right, because they have to be killed at an FDA-approved slaughterhouse in order to be sold. You've got to catch these 6-foot-long speedy... We were laughing at how do you even do this? Like, do you lasso them? Do you put them in the trunk of your car? How do you transport them? Do you put them in a gunny sack? I don't know. We have questions. Questions about the iguana meat industry. Iguana meat, $18 a pound. You can get it. It comes bone in. Very frightening. It's horrifying. I would not recommend it. But if you are in Puerto Rico and you would like to buy some iguana meat, I have an iguana meat guy in my cell phone, which is kind of like a bucket list item in and of itself. Everyone needs an iguana meat guy, right? We actually didn't end up trying it because the iguana meat guy was fishing for lobster on the day that we were supposed to meet up with him. And he was scoring just these crazy huge lobsters and texting me photos. So we were supposed to meet up with him, and he was like, I can't right now, but here's a photo of me holding a giant lobster. Look at me go. And I was like, okay, but really, what about this iguana meat? When are we going to get that? And he was like, very soon. Here's another photo of a lobster. And we were like, okay, when is this happening? And we had to leave for Colombia. So we ended up leaving for Colombia without ever trying the iguana meat, but is willing to send us some. Iguana meat is not totally off the radar for the future, I don't think. I think at some point we're definitely going to Bourdain that up. We did try blood sausage and tripe soup in Colombia, though, and we recorded that for the podcast. That's just a delightful ear snack if you want to hear retching for 20 minutes.
I thought you said they serve iguana in the restaurants and they call them chicken of the trees. So I thought you like tried it at a restaurant or something.
No, you can't really find it in restaurants. There are some restaurants, I guess there are like two restaurants in San Juan that will serve it. The locals are really not trying to pick up on the iguana meat trend. They're just not having it. But I guess iguana meat is a delicacy in South America. And the green iguana is a protected species because it's so in demand. So with the iguana meat, people in Puerto Rico were trying to do is just package up all the iguana meat they can and get it down to South America. But then they keep running into that FDA issue with the critters have to be killed at an FDA approved slaughterhouse. And you try just rounding up a bunch of wild iguanas. I think it's a real shit show.
You don't want a 6-foot iguana in a bag in your car. I just feel like it wouldn't go well.
Wait, they get that big?
No, they're huge.
Yeah.
Oh, that changes everything. I was thinking like, not as big as 6 foot, but okay.
Oh, no, they are bigger than you are. And the female iguanas lay 98 eggs a year, and 90 of them hatch into just full-blown baby iguanas that eventually turn into those, like, 6-foot-long things that will outrun you and outswim you. and they climb trees, there's no escaping them.
I didn't hear about this either when I was reading about Puerto Rico. This is so weird. It's like stuff you only find out when you get somewhere.
Have you heard of Monkey Island?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Okay.
Is that the next story?
Well, no, Monkey Island was on a previous trip to Puerto Rico, but there's a whole island of hepatitis riddled monkeys that broke out of some sort of research facility, and now they run the island, and it's the only place on Earth where monkeys basically rule the island. And so it's become this big like sociology experiment, and the monkeys have kind of broken off into tribes. All of them have hepatitis again, so you can't actually go on the island. But there is a charter boat driver named Paco who will get you very close.
Weird. Interesting. Puerto Rico seems like a very interesting place.
It is.
It really is. We hadn't necessarily thought through everything. We stayed in Aguada, which is a really nice little town, but it's way over on the western side of the island where it's a lot less touristy. We were definitely the only tourists that we saw for quite some time. And we were staying in this apartment that was above the only convenience store in town. So we were extremely visible, but then also at night we were kind of isolated. Everything would close and we were, you know, if someone broke in here, what if, who's going to hear a scream? You know, that sort of thing. And we, everything was fine. It was a really safe town, but we definitely decided that for Colombia, we were going to think things through a little bit more. We were going to make good choices and we were going to choose a place that was safer. And so we chose a place that had security. It was a high rise. It's gated. We made sure it was in the best part of town. And so we figured this is going to be a place that we can stay and feel safe and everything will be great. And the one pact that we made before we left was that when we went to Colombia, we were going to do just our very best to stay out of some cartel shit.
We were going to avoid it as much as we could, actually. We had a conversation about it. We said, you know, there's going to be a temptation to at least try cocaine in Medellin. Kelly and I don't really do that. In general, maybe a couple times in college, but you know what? Maybe we pass on the cocaine in Colombia thing. We don't really need that story because that's how much we were really trying to avoid just any kind of cartel shit.
Yes. Unfortunately, what we didn't think through is that when you are in Medellin, which is still very much run by the cartels, I don't care what any travel brochure tells you, it is still very much run by the cartels. And you get there and you stay in just the very, very nicest high rise in the very, very nicest neighborhood. And you're also in the penthouse suite and you're the only building with a rooftop pool. You are just going to be knee deep in just cartel hitmen, sex tourists. That was really it. Lots of sex tourists and cartel hitmen. Oh, and kind of deranged ex-CIA dudes. That was our entire building. And then me and Carrie.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't know, like, these people are just telling these stories. And you're like, are you trying to scare us? There were not a lot of lady travelers in this building. And Kelly and I go to some places together and people just aren't used to two women living like we do. And two empowered women going up to the top of this rooftop pool and just being there kind of rained on their sex tourism parade. I think it made them feel uncomfortable that women who look like their sisters and cousins were just sitting in the lounge chair next to their underage prostitute. But we did make some friends there.
We did, but we were just up there with like our Starbucks cups and just being gringas up on the roof. And these guys were just really bummed that they couldn't bring their teenage prostitutes up there because we would see.
This sounds like a movie or something.
Yeah.
We didn't tell them that they couldn't, to be clear. They felt it to be inappropriate, I guess. We weren't making too many value judgments. No, it really was. It was ridiculous. I've traveled a lot. Right? But Medellin really made me feel like a traveler. Medellin made me feel like I had finally seen some shit, you know?
And that's why you guys stayed for 7 weeks instead of just a month, right?
Well, that was another mistake that we had made, Victor, because we show up and we're like, this is way better than we expected. Because I originally found this place on a Reddit thread in the Digital Nomads subreddit. And I researched Medellin a little bit. There are all kinds of articles that are just like, well, this is a top place to go for digital nomads. And I was like, Kelly, pack your bags. We're going to Colombia. So we were so excited when we showed up and it was just way better than anything even could make it sound. The views are incredible. The food is amazing. The city smells good. It's like San Francisco wishes it could be this clean. And you didn't smell piss one time. Never, never did we smell pee. And like, say that in Paris. You can't. right? So we just kind of fell in love with this city almost immediately. And more than anything, we fell in love with the sickest Airbnb I'd ever stayed in. And so we were like, clearly we need to extend our stay. It's day four and we're just feeling very good about this. So let's extend. And we did. And then shit started getting a little bit real. And then there were like some scary people in our building. And then we really started noticing just all of the teenage prostitutes. But then we were kind of, we had booked it. We had a conversation like, do we leave? Do we just cut and run and take the loss? And we ended up staying largely in part because we had met some really awesome people and they helped get us through it and told us things about chop shops and surgeons and other sketchy things about Medellin that make me not really excited to return. But Kelly just cannot wait to go back.
I really liked it.
What's a chop shop? I feel like I don't know a lot of the lingo.
Oh, Kelly, do you want to play glossary?
Yeah, okay. We were a little concerned about crime in Medellin, but it turns out, especially in El Poblado, which was the neighborhood that we were staying in, you don't really need to. And the reason for this is because there are just no unauthorized crimes going on in this area.
This is what we were told by multiple people.
Yeah, the cartels don't like it when things get messy in that area. They don't like people getting robbed, that sort of thing. So if an unauthorized crime is to occur in that neighborhood, then that person is just very swiftly spirited away to a chop shop. So literally there's tons of high rises and that sort of thing around there. And just kind of throughout the neighborhood, there are places where they take people to kill them. And they have surgeons, often who are actually doctors, who are actually surgeons, whose job is to chop these people up and put them in barrels or whatever it is that they do. And those were apparently just all around the neighborhood, like very close to us. So that was fun.
Right. And we heard the same story from multiple people on just in completely different settings, but people who had been in the area for a while. And Kelly and I found this place that had an amazing burrata salad. Just the most delicious burrata I had ever had. We went back there a few different times and then we were talking to our friend Mauricio, who's a local, about it. And he was just like, oh, that place, you're going to like the number one cartel hangout. And you ladies are just staying there until how late at night? Not late, because Kelly and I kind of imposed a curfew on ourselves.
Yeah, locals know not to go there. It's like, it's not for you. You're not supposed to be there. And we just showed up and were very conspicuous and stayed there for a very long time, just multiple nights in a row.
We really liked that burrata. They had a good sangria as well.
That's so bizarre, because I'm hearing all these things about how Medellin is the Chiang Mai of South America. Things are popping up. It's becoming a tech hub. But I'm questioning myself, my research capabilities, but at the same time, I'm just like eager to hear more.
Oh, you just need to go up to a rooftop pool and let the locals tell you some stories.
Well, and here's the other thing. We really made what we thought was a really strong decision in choosing to stay in that building. But knowing what I know now about Colombia, I'd still probably go because the rooftop pool was really just that sick. But I don't think that a lot of people who are coming through there are experiencing the same things that we are. The other thing is that because of this building, we made friends with people who were seasoned travelers and people who were friends with people in the cartel. So we knew things that I think other people don't know. If you go to Medellin, it is the most beautiful, clean, pristine, amazing city you've ever been to. Everything's so cheap and it really doesn't feel nefarious, at least not on the nicer sides of town. It's all going on under the surface. We just happened to get involved with people who told us more stuff. And also just the building we were in. We're up in our apartment. There were lots of drones in the city, which is weird.
Oh, yeah. How about that? A drone on multiple occasions just came up into our window.
Like just taking pictures.
What do you do about that?
Apparently nothing, because we were watching it and then we saw where it went and it actually went back into the window of somebody in our building. And then luckily we had someone there to tell us like, no, you can't go yell at that guy because that guy's a cartel hitman. He does what he wants. You just close your blinds and you deal with it.
That's what they said. He was like, not that guy. You don't tell on that guy. And okay, well, I wouldn't even know who to tell. The security guy, maybe, but then, you know, it was just a really sketchy situation. But yeah, there was a drone that would just randomly, on several occasions throughout our stay, just peep into our windows and remind us to shut our blinds. So that's what we would do.
That's so bizarre. I thought it was because like a lot of digital nomads filming their YouTube videos and shit like that. But hey, it's a cartel hitman.
Yeah, no, we really lucked out.
No, and it sounds so bizarre. Like, believe me, I am fully aware of just how batshit crazy this all sounds. But these were the stories that we were told. When the guy asked me, do you know what a chop shop is? And I was like, I have seen Gone in 60 Seconds. I know what a chop shop is. That's where you go and you take apart stolen cars or apparently dead bodies in Medellin. It was a bizarre experience. But we're glad that we had it. And again, those views are sick. Recommend checking them out if you get the chance. Cannot beat the brunch prices. $5 eggs Benny. It's good.
It's so good. $11 surf and turf. You just have to be willing to live with a low grade level of just constant fear.
Offline, I'll tell you exactly what building to stay at. You're really going to want to check out these rooftop pools.
It really is the best.
Because I'm going there in July. I'm like simultaneously very excited, simultaneously very curious. How do local feel about the fact that so many quote-unquote digital nomads are coming to their city? Because I imagine that's like a very interesting experience. Because Thailand is very used to getting a lot of tourists. Colombia as a country, obviously with all the shit that's gone down in recent history, it's not exactly on everyone's wish list for places to go to in South America. So how has this influx of, I don't know, gringos, how has that affected the locals and how do they see it?
Well, I will say that
they don't love it.
No, they don't. So there are two points that I think are worth making. The first is it's a totally different experience to travel as a female than it is to travel as a man. And we've learned this the hard way. A lot of travel articles are written by men. And so it's from the male point of view. And in Medellin, the way we were treated when there was just even a guy around, a guy at the table got us much better service. They don't seem to be really used to empowered and independent women. We were not treated very well when it was just the two of us. But introduce any kind of male character and we were just treated better. If it was a local, we got the best service. If it was a local, we really got the red carpet treatment and we had made friends with several locals who would kind of take us to their favorite places. And that was a really good experience. Like I said, it's different as a female than it is for a male. So your male listeners are going to have a different and probably better experience in Medellin than your female listeners. And I think that that's just kind of a cultural thing. Out there, we learned, here's another fun story, we learned what jamón serrano is. And you may think that jamón serrano belongs on charcuterie, and it does. But with the locals, they use it to refer to women who are 23 or older, 24 or older, and don't have a boyfriend or a husband. They're just jamón serrano, which is like an old age, dried out hanging ham, maybe in a shop window.
23 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, very young. You become a jamón serrano at a very young age out there, apparently.
Right, I've been one for almost a decade.
Right. And so Kelly and I, as we like to say, are in our mid to late 27s, heavy on the late 27s, we'll say. And so we're just like the extra oldest aged jamón serrano rolling around Medellin. And so there's like cultural things that way, right? But then also in talking to a lot of locals, we became friends with a sommelier out there who consulted on a lot of the wine lists for some of the top restaurants in the city, which was a great hookup to have. He told us about, how do you say it, Kelly? The backpackers? Starts with an M. Mochiladas?
Oh, I forget the word. I don't want to say it wrong.
Yeah, there's a Spanish word for backpacker that they use, and it's always used in a negative connotation. I don't know if there's a real strong difference between backpackers and digital nomads in a lot of ways, but they don't seem to be very pleased with how Americans in particular behave down there. And Kelly and I kind of saw that at the pool. So it's really easy. If you want to go find a party in Medellin, it's not difficult to do. People are coming up and they're trying to sell you DVDs and they're trying to sell you chiclets, but really what they're trying to sell you is cocaine. And if you want that, we bought it. We bought the Devil's Advocate in Spanish. And then Santiago, one of our fixers in Medellin, was like, you know that that's one of the top cocaine street salesmen out here. And he was really just trying to sell you some cocaine. And Kelly and I were just very interested in his DVD selection.
We bought the DVDs though.
So if you want to go and just do a bunch of blow and hookers, have I got the place for you? But when a bunch of Americans consistently go out and do that, what you end up with is a bad name for Americans. And they didn't even know. They didn't really seem used to, like I said, two ladies like me and Kelly rolling through their city for a month and a half. So with the digital nomad community, I don't know how many people actually, like what percentage are actually really serious about their work and which are just spending their graduation money until it runs out, making some money along the way. But Kelly and I are definitely in the former group. We rise and grind. We are up and working every day by 7 o'clock in the morning so that we have hopefully some time in the afternoon to go and do some stuff. But you see a lot of American party types. Are they digital nomads? Are they working? Are they just on an extended party trip? I don't know.
I think another thing to mention, though, is that obviously we had a little bit different experience as women. I think still, though, most digital nomads are men. But I think even they are going to experience a little bit of, first of all, like Carrie said, people don't super love. They're a little suspicious of people who come in from the, like tourists who come in from the outside, just because there is like a certain amount of just partying shenanigans that goes on. And they're on the lookout for that. But also, it's a very quiet city. It's not a place where people talk to their neighbors a lot, and it's not a place where you talk to people on the street. You don't talk to people you don't know. And it's something that came up a lot, and the people said to us a lot was just, you can't say that, or you can't do that, or you can't talk to that person, because you never know who that person is. The cartels really are everywhere, and you don't want to offend somebody, and you don't want to get into something with someone. And so I think that that's just a holdover, just because of all the things that have gone down in Colombia. Everybody just kind of minds their own business and keeps their head down. And so when you go there, sometimes you're expecting people to be like a little more like friendly or outgoing, and really they just kind of keep to themselves. And I think that's just another cultural thing as well that I think male digital nomads will experience. And it doesn't necessarily mean they don't like you. They're just not in the habit of speaking to people that they don't know, because it's a dangerous thing to do down there.
Gotcha. So why do you think that it's being propped up so much as like a hotspot? Because people love throwing buzzwords. People love talking about like the next big thing or next big place for people to go to.
It's so beautiful. You're going to see it when you go out there. It's absolutely gorgeous. The great thing about the rooftop pool is there were just 360 degree views. So you're like in this valley surrounded by mountains, and all of the construction is done by, I guess, one of maybe five different dudes. So there's just a congruency to the skyline. There's just like one of five different types of buildings. You're ringed by mountains, and it's absolutely breathtakingly gorgeous. We were just tripping on the views the entire time we were there. It's the number one thing that we were going to miss.
Too bad you have to keep your blinds down.
I know. Only when the drone was out.
There were a ton of digital nomads there. I think actually is a great space for that. We went to a few meetups. We had a few meetups of our own. We met some really fantastic people. For all these things we're saying, people need to be aware, because I think a lot of people show up, they just don't understand the complexity of Medellin. It can really just feel like Never Never Land, I think, for people, because it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's the best food you've ever seen. There's just the most attractive people you've ever seen in your life walking around. It's really easy to just get lost in that and to not pay attention to the stuff that's under the surface. I would still 1,000% recommend people go there. You are going to have an amazing time. I can pretty much guarantee you that. It's just helpful to have some like context. And we definitely saw behind the curtain in a way that I think probably most digital nomads don't, just because of where we ended up.
Just don't get drunk and mouthy with any of the locals and you'll be fine. But we heard so many stories from different people about how this one guy was being drunk and obnoxious. It's always a different person. It might have been a security guard one time, could have been a taxi driver another, could have just been some dude outside of a bar in the next story. This guy will get drunk and mouthy, and then the guy will end up getting into a fight with him, and then the drunk guy gets beat up. But that drunk guy is somebody important at a cartel or something. And then the next thing you know, didn't even pick the fight, is dead, because that's just how they roll out there. And so we heard several different stories along those very same lines. It was a cautionary tale for us.
Assassination is the number one cause of death. Several people told us that assassination is the number one cause of death in Medellin.
I don't know how accurate that statistic is. I find that hard to believe, seeing how the cab drivers drive out there. I have to imagine. And the motorcycles, too. I have to imagine that car accidents.
Death by taxi has to be number one.
Death by taxi can be. I would recommend getting an Uber. Oh, here's another fun story. When you get an Uber, if you choose to go that route instead of a taxi, and again, there are benefits and drawbacks to both. In our experience, the Uber drivers tended to drive less erratically. But if you get an Uber, you have to get in the front seat. And it's not because Uber is illegal necessarily, but the taxi drivers are not fans of this Uber business. And apparently, less so in Medellin, more so in Bogota. They will rip the Uber drivers and their passengers out of the car, beat up the Uber driver, and then light the car on fire. So the Uber drivers freak out if two of you try and get in the back seat. One of you always has to be in the front, which was, you know, a new experience for us. And it was explained to us why. We understood, but then we're also scared. So it's just a lot of things like that.
Well, it sounds like I have to experience it for myself.
You have to. You really have to. And bring a friend so that you guys can share the stories, because Medellin is just unlike anything I have ever seen before.
No, for sure. So after Colombia, where'd you go next?
We have a client that's launching a product, and we have to plan a product launch party in New York City for that. So that product launch party is going on the first weekend of May. We had to be kind of local to the East Coast, so we are making a quick pit stop in Manchester, New Hampshire, which is my home base, and we are picking up my car and road tripping up to Montreal. It's like 5 hours north. We're going to go scope out America's hairline, because after Colombia, we needed to reset our radar for what weird was.
Absolutely.
So it's nice. So now you get to like go back to, I guess, a functioning normal society is supposed to be like. But now that I'm saying those words, I feel like they don't really match up to the United States in some ways. So now I'm questioning everything.
No. And I'll tell you, the society was functioning out there and the streets were just spotless. I have never seen just a more orderly culture in general. Quiet, respectful people. You would expect to hear a lot of noise pollution in a city of that size. There's really none. It's a really cool city, and I'm excited to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, I'm excited to go there myself. As you think about like your past 3 months and looking ahead, because you guys have much more travels ahead of you, what are some of the things you're looking forward to the most? And do you have all your spots scoped out, or is it just month by month?
I think we're planned out through July, like the middle of July. We have a few more events for clients that we need to pop back to the US. We have one in Boston in June and one in San Diego in July. So we have to make our international stuff work in between that. But we're planned out through about then. And then after that, I think we're going to play it by ear. Probably we're going to pop over to Europe after that for a little bit, for a few months probably. So we're trying to figure that out. But I know things that we're looking forward to. While we were in Medellin, I feel like just everyone that we met told us we needed to go to Costa Rica. And Carrie is very excited about holding a monkey. So we need to make that happen.
I'm going to hold a monkey. That's on my bucket list. I need to hold a monkey before I die. Hopefully it's a baby monkey and not the kind that's going to want to bite my face off.
And I think we want to do Iceland. The Northern Lights are a big one for us, for sure.
The Northern Lights from a hot spring. Specifically, our bucket list is very detailed.
You got to have the whole experience.
Yes.
The luxury experience, not the go to the middle of nowhere where it's like freezing and just look up in the cold. You have to be in the hot spring.
Yes. I would also take from a helicopter.
It seems like you're sticking closer to North, South America and Europe. Do you have any plans to hop on over to Asia, the Far East?
That's a problem for us. I like to stay at most plus 6 hours ahead max of EST. So Kelly's main client is based in California. That's 9 hours difference. When you're talking about social media and interacting with clients and scheduling conference calls, it's just a lot easier to not be completely flipped. You don't want to be having those conference calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, or at least I don't want to. And the nature of our business, there's just no way to get around that. So we've limited ourselves to PST would be the farthest west that we would go. And then the furthest east that we would go would be plus six, which still gets you Paris. We're going to hit up Sofia, Bulgaria, which is another digital nomad hotspot. Have you been there? I have friends who like it so much they moved there and they just cannot get enough of it. They're very big into Bitcoin and digital currencies. They actually created the world's first Bitcoin ATM. Shout out to the Harvey brothers. But we're going to go hang out with them. Kelly has no Bitcoin yet. I don't know how that's happened, considering she's been my friend for almost a decade now. She's going to lose her Bitcoin virginity in Sofia, Bulgaria.
There's too many things to keep track of.
I have friends who just do all of that background research for me, and then sometimes they just tell me what to do, and I do it.
That's the best kind of friends to have. Just like, here's everything on a platter. Just do it. Just say yes.
Yeah, here's what I would do if I were you, ... That's all I need.
Perfect. So do you have any recommendations for people who are sitting at home considering living a lifestyle like this? Maybe they have the means to do it already, but they're just kind of like on the fence, not sure if they should.
Just do it. Because Kelly and I, the first three episodes of our podcast, the first episode is us deciding to become digital nomads. And then the next two episodes are just us having panic attacks. I gained 5 pounds because my body didn't know what to do with the stress. And I found out I'm an emotional eater. It was very stressful to pack up our lives, put it into a 10 by 10 and get on the plane. But once we got to the destination, we never looked back. And we have built in all kinds of exit doors throughout this process to where at any point in time, if it becomes too much, either of us can tap out and there's not going to be any hard feelings. We haven't even considered it yet. And we look back at the stress and the anxiety of how we were feeling before we came out here, in air quotes. It was all kind of for nothing. Because this has been the best decision we've ever made. I've lost 10 pounds out here. Kelly's down almost 30, and we're not even trying. We're just living our best lives. Oh, we're crossing items off of our bucket list, and we're creating weird stories in places like Medellin, Colombia. And I could have gone my whole life without knowing what a real chop shop is, but now I can tell others. And so it's just been overwhelmingly positive. And I think that if you're the right kind of person, what I mean by that is as long as you're the type of person who can roll with the punches, because things always go wrong when you travel. And if you're the type of person who's going to spaz out and everything becomes a crisis, this is not the lifestyle for you. But if you can be flexible, or if you are flexible, and if your natural default state is happy and fun, this is the best possible lifestyle I could imagine.
Yeah, and the coolest thing is that both of you are just getting started. This is just, you're starting month 4, and you guys are having so much fun already. So the stories are likely going to get crazier and crazier as time progresses.
Yes, we met this friend down in Medellin. His name is Matthew Seth, and he has been traveling for like 10, 15 years. And he said about us that we were like 4-year-olds who had just shown up the ball pit at McDonald's. And we were like, that is so accurate, actually. Like, that's how we feel. We've gotten a taste for it. And I think originally we were like, well, maybe we'll be able to only hack it for 3 months or 6 months. And I don't see Carrie or I walking away from this lifestyle anytime soon. I think this is going to be a long-term thing for both of us. We're just really loving it.
And I really like staying a month at a time in different locations, because you get a huge discount on your Airbnb when you rent it for an entire month. It's just the right amount of time for a place to start feeling like home. You know the streets, you know where the grocery store is, you know what's at the grocery store and where to find it. And then you move on to the next location.
You know who the hitmen are.
Yeah, you know, I, again, could have gone without that. I could have pegged him as that, maybe, with his tattoos. One of our friends said, oh, that's definitely a cartel hitman. I believed him. There's just no question.
Perfect. So how can people follow your experiences and your journey as you continue on workationing all over the world?
I think the best place is to check out the Workationing podcast. We have been documenting our entire process of becoming digital nomads. We've got, I think, 13 or 14 episodes up. We've got some really hot takes on Medellin. Some of it's been published, and we're going to be publishing a few more episodes this week. So that's a good place. Workationing.com, also an option. The Facebook page has lots of good articles, interesting articles and photos from our travels, and that's facebook.com/workationing. And you can find us on Twitter too, and Instagram. We're really just all over the place. If you start searching for workationing, you're going to find us.
And I think I'll need to be binging on some of your Medellin content, because I feel like we've only scratched the surface, and maybe you guys left out some of the juicier stories.
We might have.
Yeah, there's always more. There's always more with Medellin. It's just a crazy onion.
It's a crazy onion. It's an acid onion, just a disco acid onion, that Medellin.
Yeah.
But yeah, for now, I just want to really thank you for hopping on the podcast. I learned so much, and I have no idea, like, if I was thinking about Medellin in one way earlier today, now I don't even know what to think about it. And I'm glad that you guys did all the on-the-ground research on my behalf, so I know what exactly not to do and how exactly to behave.
Well, you should go, though. You're going to love it. It's really great.
Yeah, everything's already booked. I'm already locked in, so.
Awesome.
You're going to love it.
Okay, I'll be sure to reach out offline then.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear all about it. We'll have to stay in touch, and I really want to hear all about it.
Yeah, we'll hit you up with some recommendations.
We have some recommendations. There's a great bar with just some of the craziest shit inside of it you'll ever see.
All right, thanks, Victor.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for my interview with Carrie and Kelly. If you want to find out more about them, along with information about everything we talked about, visit theremotelifestyle.com/33. There you'll find the show notes for this week's episode. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Remote Podcast. Be sure to leave a review of the show so that I can continue to improve it. If you liked what you heard, go ahead and hit subscribe so you never miss out on an episode. If you're ready to take the leap and live the remote lifestyle, visit theremotelifestyle.com/remote to sign up for our free email course titled Become a Digital Nomad in 7 Steps, even if you have no idea where to start. The course will take you from sitting in your office wondering what to do with your life to having a plan of action to live and work remotely. So make sure you don't miss out by visiting theremotelifestyle.com/remote. That's all for now, and I'll see you in the next episode.